Of waves.
It's the new Reggie Van Stockham Show podcast. And just having featured the incredible Zan Hoffman performing his Body Cocktail at my recent show in Shelbyville, Kentucky, I thought that we would bring the legend, the man himself, to the microphone.
All right.
Give us the tale of his life. He's back in Louisville, Kentucky right now after having spent 7 years in Europe on a 30-day visa. He's quite a charmer, I think. He lives in Galicia.
Yes, I do.
And that's Spain. That's northwest Spain near the Portugal border?
Yeah, the Portuguese border ends at a certain point in the River Minho, the Ribeira Sacra, cuts Spain off from Portugal, and then from that distance north is a district of Spain that's considered to be one of the first free countries of Europe.
Huh. Are those the Basque people there?
No, that's a little farther east. This is a farther west. So the people in Galicia are known as Galegos, and they speak the language that's called Galego. So,
are they on the Atlantic Ocean?
Absolutely, they are absolutely on that corner. So the northwest corner is so crenulated, yeah, that it is known as having more space than much of the rest of Spain's borders, and they are known sailors.
Ah.
Because you can see it's the only part that has to face the new world, the thing, the unknown. My friend Alberto's pointing out one time, we're at Isla de Arosa, and he says, look right here. He says, you see a mountain here? You see this mountain here? But look out there, and he's pointing to this bay, and he says, this is unknown. We always see mountains. We're always in Galicia. We're always stuck. We always feel these mountains hem us in, and they feel like they're here, but the ocean is a great unknown.
I see. And you've lived there for the past 7 years?
Yeah, 7.5. You know, I think I counted it. 2015 was 2 years in Spain.
Yeah.
And then I spent half my 2016 in Spain, right, but I only spent 1 month in 2017 in America.
I see.
So that's the sort of like, I think it's a slowly, you know, just the trajectory where you don't rush across a gigantic decision like this, but I just ease into it.
Well, we also want to say that the incredible Zan Hoffman, the artist, was born here in Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, I was born in Palo Alto, but I lived here since 1970.
Well, now, that's why we have these podcasts, to know these things. Indeed.
Details of great import to the future that we'll be staring down in these files.
I want to circle right around to your birth, but I want to say that seated across from me at this podcast is a minor Baltic state celebrity, a man who has been on the Lithuanian Voice.
Lietuva Balsas.
I see. And we'll probably get into that, but you can see it online on YouTube, I think, in fact.
Absolutely.
His performance there. He's something...
With Skydra Januseta, I cannot consider myself more than half of this amazing thing, but continue, please.
Yes, and she's delightful to see perform with you. And when I saw it, I thought to myself, well, my gosh, I think he's hit the big time.
It felt like the big time working with her. Seriously.
Yeah.
This was, I was half joking when, during the interview, so I said, well, it's really nice to be here, but working with Skydra is more significant.
Right, and that was the interview by the Voice panelists afterwards. Yeah. So we'll come back to that because there's a lot of history getting...
A lot to unpack.
Yes, a lot to unpack, and we'll start in Palo Alto. So we can't even get to Palo Alto until we indicate where we are today. This is the Derby Week 2024 in Louisville, Kentucky.
50th. It's no,
150th. So it's a big deal. A lot of people coming on in, all of the celebrities. Louisville's a big place. It's the best weather of the year. And
my mom always said, if you don't like Louisville in springtime, what is wrong with you?
Well, yeah, it's, I always say, if you're not underground caving in Kentucky, what's wrong with you? So same cut from the same cloth. I remember the 100th running.
Oh, me too. Yeah, it was a big deal.
It was a big deal.
Wow, we were all like, wow, yeah, we're alive. Yeah. 76 or somewhere around that.
I was a graduate student at the University of Louisville.
So when would that have been?
Well, 50 years ago.
Duh, but...
74, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I'm 76. I learned math in Kentucky, you can tell.
You've done pretty well with what you've learned here. 150 years, big deal. So, a good time to have this this podcast. Now, that tells us where we are today. Let's go back to Palo Alto. That's in California. That's a peninsula city. It's also the home of Stanford University. So how did you end up being there?
Wow, you know, the Stanford University link, it is now their university hospital. It wasn't at the time. And my mom, the most delicious sidebar possible on Palo Alto is we, Reggie, have California with Spanish names, and we think nothing of it because we're in America. And so when we see here San Francisco, we're not thinking Santos Francisco or Santos Jose. But so it never ever occurred to me until I arrived in Spain on tours that Palo Alto's was Spanish.
Yeah.
And so my friend says, "You realize that's Spanish?" I was like, "Oh wow!" It never occurred to me. And he says, "You know what that means, don't you?" And I'm like, "No, no, tall stick." So of all pieces of poetry.
Yes, because you are certainly that.
Exactly.
Indeed. And if you don't believe me, take a look at www.vanstockham.blog, where you can hear this podcast, but you can also see Zan Hoffman's body cocktail performance in Shelbyville, Kentucky.
Oh, what a joy that was.
It was a joy.
What an opportunity that I didn't, you know, typical, I love interrupting you, this is so good, but typical of the fact that I don't ask too many questions when someone says something and I just do it. And then I let things surprise me.
Well, and we have already up on my Facebook, we'll soon have this up on my blog site, your performance of I'm in the Club.
Hey, yes.
Yeah, that's in the club. That's a good one. And the one before that was Kisses. Which?
Covered in Handkerchief Kisses.
Yeah, Handkerchief Kisses. And if you just want to feel like you could possibly have been embarrassed, take a look at that. That's because you're obviously not going to be in the club. But the question is, you might have had one of those handkerchief kisses. So back to Palo Alto.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And my son went to Stanford for his doctorate in physics.
No way.
Yeah. And I went to Santa Clara University for my undergraduate in biology down on the street. So what were you doing there? And what year was that?
64.
64, yeah.
And my mom is teaching, and I'm thinking it's about 8th grade, or maybe 7th or 8th grade kids. And my dad, Jim Hoffman, has his initial degree from the University of Illinois in chemical engineering.
Ah.
And his master's degree from what's now Purdue's Cran Arts School in business management. So he parlays something really nicely, is he's in management possible positions of chemical companies.
Yeah.
This is where he set himself up for his strengths. And I think this is a good thing we can think of, that I have to congratulate my pops on for this notion in his 30s. He's like, I'm going to set myself up for my strengths. I realized, because he was athletic, but he realized that wasn't a future at that point, because he was the best basketball player in Illinois when he graduated from college, high school.
Oh. So, where in Illinois?
He was in DeWitt.
DeWitt, okay.
Just south of the big city.
Well, chemical engineering is an exciting field. It is really an investigation of reality.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and what you can do with it. So you're in Palo Alto.
And so my dad has to have a gig in this field, and I believe it might have been International Minerals and Chemicals.
Yeah.
Because we soon go to Chicago and then to India. So it's his IMC job that takes us into India.
Okay, where in India?
We were in Hyderabad, which is South Central,
yeah,
on the Deccan Plateau, and the gig was in Vijayapatnam. You pronounce that perfectly.
Now, you know, the Deccan Plateau is very interesting. The Deccan Plateau is a gigantic lava field. The biggest lava field, I think, that the world has ever seen.
Wow.
And there is an argument out there that the eruptions that spread the lava of the Deccan flow contributed to the demise of the dinosaurs along with the meteorite.
Wow, that's something I haven't heard.
But that's another story. That's so how old were you when you left the Deccan flow?
I was... up in those zones until 69.
5 years
ago. We had a ride there in 67.
Right.
And my dad was being the point guard for the Green Revolution in India.
And the Green Revolution is a fertilizer revolution.
Yes, because grains have to be...
Yeah.
Grains have to be keeping countries grain self-sufficient against the horrific uncertainties of weathers and monsoons and these kind of things.
Big deal, a big deal, yeah.
And so my old man at 36 has decided this something he wants to do. But he had an opportunity to go to Thailand after that. And he said, no, we've done this one thing. And he figured this is the right thing to have done. And I think he also said later on that you really need a job at some point where you're returning something to the world.
So where did he go from there?
We were in Chicago for a brief minute, and then we ended up in Louisville quite quickly. In 1970, and my dad was the vice president of operations for Reliance Universal.
Now, Reliance Universal was a paint company, right?
Chemical coatings. You're totally right.
Chemical coatings, right?
And they got bought by Axo in the end.
In the end, that's right. So, how did he move up through management in Reliance?
He made it to a point. It's another story altogether, of course. But he made it a point in the history of change in business where MBAs show up. And his generation is all about our moral compass. This is what we're doing. An MBA show up, said we're going to improve business, and our moral compass is not the question. And so my dad possibly just wasn't the man for that transition.
When did he leave the company? When did he retire?
I'd say the early 80s is when that happens.
And then when did he retire from the company?
Because this is when I'm in college, so I'm guessing that's got to be the early 80s, maybe 83-ish.
Okay. Now, college. What high school did you go to?
Oh, Ballard Academy of Higher... Well, we were saying... Ballard Academy of Lower Learning and Higher Alcohol Tolerance.
Yes, Ballard. That would be Ballard High School.
Back when they were so clever, Reggie, they had put quotes around the word high on the sign.
I see. Yes, clever, yeah.
We are clever.
So...
And I just missed by 1 year streaking. Because a year before I arrived, I was in 8th grade when Ballard was losing its junior high. And I just missed the last person streaking through the corridor.
You know, seeing Palo Alto streaking at Ballard might be a little odd, I would say.
Yeah, so maybe it's a good thing this transition was at that point. But
okay, and where did you live at the time? What part of Louisville?
Oh, in Indian Hills.
What street?
Well, Council.
A what?
On Council Road.
Council Road, yeah. That's a nice part of town.
It is a nice part.
You had a good upbringing.
Yes, my British friend would say it's a leafy suburb.
Leafy, yes.
I always love that term because we don't use that here, but I thought that really describes Indian Hills, because when we were growing up, they were taking the East End over with new suburbs, and I think it was a lack of leafiness that made these new houses seem so just
naked,
and the whole thing just seemed so like frightening. And you thought, why would you go into this thing? And once you drive through the areas now, they're not bad.
No, of course.
They're like this.
Yeah, trees.
You know?
So, this is in high school. You graduated high school in what year?
82.
No. 82, you say?
Yeah.
1982. Had you begun your interest in creative expression in high school, or did that wait till college or after?
I think I'm playing classical violin.
Tell me about it. In high school?
Oh, yeah.
You're trained as a violinist?
In fourth grade. Started taking lessons.
Okay.
And I was at St. Francis at that time.
St. Francis...
In the Fields, as they call it now.
Yeah, that's a grade school.
Yeah, in Goshen.
Ah.
Yeah, and then that was a rather experimental piece of work. And then at some point, I hear Brahms' Violin Concerto, done by Isaac Stern.
Mm-hmm.
And... you can fast forward to the Louisville Coliseum when I actually got to see him do it himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a...
Yeah, so you're playing playing the violin.
And so the violin just seems to me very expressive, you know? And it seems to me irresistible in this classical sense. And my parents were raising me with, my peers weren't really over-influencing my taste in music at that point. Mm-hmm. And classical seemed to be something like a legitimacy that you could have alongside all the other interests you have. you know, something that...
Yes, and the violin is not constrained by frets. It will allow you to slide between notes. Yeah?
This is, in the end, Reggie, this has kept me from playing fretted instruments because it just doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm used to the fluidity of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you see or hear Zan Hoffman, you'll know what he means. So, you're in high school, you're playing the violins. You play any other instruments?
No. Something that occurred to me only recently, because I talked to all sorts of people in these different fields, and is, I was actually talking to my, Simon Simonis, my troll, who's a German man married to a Lithuanian woman. And I think we all need a troll. I think it was really funny. And he doesn't even understand how much he's my troll.
Well, what does that mean to you, that someone is a troll?
It's the internet term that we just can't resist getting on people's case because they don't have their stuff right the way we want it to be.
So a critic that perhaps is not positive in intention.
Exactly, but then we just can't. And so I had a friend who said, my father is a troll and he doesn't understand it. He just trolls these anti-vaxxers like crazy because this is his thing. But it's a thing we end up doing. And this guy is always on my case about stuff. But we're talking today about instruments because he plays, he's on my case because my voice is not as classically satisfying as he wishes it was, because he sings and he plays piano. And I said, but I'm a violinist. He says, oh, but I play viola. I said, no, playing viola and being good at viola, Reggie, huge difference.
So I
want to circle into something. I'm sorry, I'm drifting for a second. But playing the violin, it only occurred to me recently, it's really the ne plus ultra of instruments where you never can play it well enough. There will always be people who can criticize the quality of what you've done, how much you haven't practiced, what you're missing, the things. It will never, and I, you know, other people say, oh, people are critical of guitars but or pianists, but no, you get to a point and people are impressed beyond words that you're doing this at such a level of proficiency. But I had to give up the violin in college because, oh my God, this is another generation. This is a level of perfection that doesn't matter right now. I'm in punk rock, and I'm in new wave, and the Dead Kennedys are, and Damned, and Black Flag are doing this crazy stuff.
All right, well, how'd you get to college, and what college was that?
Drake University, Des Moines, 1982 to 87.
With
a little 1 year in U of L in the middle.
All right, what'd you study?
I started mistakenly in business.
Yes.
And just trying to be the dad, and I realized, oh, I can't be that guy. But my math skills are just horrible. As I said before, as you noticed earlier, my math is already off. But I realized journalism was totally my fit. So I had a journalism work there, and it was a beautiful choice because Drake is not of any great significance for its business school, but the journalism school is housed in a Mies van der Rohe building, maybe the only one in all of, or one of the very few in all of Iowa. And
few what?
Mies van der Rohe.
And that
the modernist architecture, the German architect. Okay. And so it's because the school is funded by Meredith Companies, who had been doing Better Homes and Gardens and House Beautiful and that kind of stuff. And so its journalism department was known. And so I lucked into, you know, an area where my studies, interestingly enough, very hard, didn't do well, went to U of L, realized, oh, this is gravy. That's because my school, Drake, is actually giving me an education. That's why it's hard, because they're not fooling with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so nutshell, I was in the orchestra there for 1 year.
Violin.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Second violin always.
Did you play other instruments?
No, only one. This rolls back into that. Sometimes I drift to you pull me back. But I picked up instruments when I put the violin down, because everything else is easy.
Ah, that's interesting. Okay.
Because it's so difficult, mm-hmm. and you can argue there are more difficult instruments. Maybe there are a handful of them, but because it's so painfully difficult, because you really have to have both parts and no frets,
right,
and the your bowing matter, your both hands matter extremely much to what's going on there. That every instrument just seemed easy by that time. So I just started fooling with wind instruments. So much fun. And I really liked the... I was playing with the clarinet. It was a bit hard. The oboe was like butter. Melted butter. Lovely.
Okay, so you graduate from Drake in
87.
Okay, and you're already tuned to the new wave of music.
I started my label in the middle of all this.
Okay, what label is that? What's it called?
I ran this thing that began the name as Zidzik, which stood for the Zamstonian International Distribution Services Independent Cassette Company.
Okay, spell it, say it, spell it, and then say what it means slowly.
Zidzik.
And what does it mean?
And I originally started doing mail art.
Well, no, what does that mean?
I was going to tell you the parts. Originally, I was doing mail art, and it's Zamstonian International Distribution Service. Right. And so that's the mail art thing. And then I realized, oh, this is my independent cassette company with the word company spelled phonetically, so I have a K.
Okay, now I very much want to get into that history. We chatted about that.
What happens is I've 3 years of that before I get out of college. Go.
Okay, now, okay, and I want to come right back to that, but I want to know what degree did you graduate with?
I got out of there in media graphics with a minor in the creative fields.
Okay. Would you come back to Louisville?
Came back to Louisville and was looking for work in the advertising agencies.
Okay.
And exact same year, if I'm not wrong, cool. Yeah, maybe a year later-ish, that I start my cassette label. I'm learning graphic design in the physical analog way. You're taking strips and developing them and kerning stuff on film and all sorts of manual labor to site type set type. And then my school goes computer intensive in 1984 or 1985 and sets up Macintosh labs across campus.
That's early.
This is the trajectory that I come up to today, is that I'm 40 years deep into being an Apple fanatic.
Very nice. Okay, now I'm going to ask this question, but that's not what I really want to talk about. I just want to get it into the record, so to speak, and then I want to come right back to the beginning of that record label when you're in college. But when you come back to Louisville, Kentucky, in around 1987 and through the 90s, did you find a form of employment that was a career path, or did you move from different areas that you worked in order to pursue your creative interests?
I had the label running, and so that was like a fixed expense in my life of postal costs. I'm answering this in my crazy circular way, but it's a fixed expense. You know, okay, I'm drinking and I have rent, but also an absolute fixed cost of my life is running my label, because that's what I'm up to. So you have postal stuff, you have Kinko's copies, you have blank tapes, And the physical expenses of running a label to make no money, but because this is my passion, and to trade with people internationally. And so the jobs I had to pay me enough to include those costs, and that label thing was an absolute fixing, and I bounced like a freaking ball through companies that had Macintoshes.
Okay. So between... I met you at the Penn Dennis Club.
Absolutely.
Which was a staid old men's club in Louisville.
Yeah.
And you were working there at the time.
Yeah. The there's a pivotal... This is a long trajectory from 87 to this, but the pivotal point in the city of Louisville comes in the turn of the millennium. Mm-hmm. I'm finally squeezing into a point where I have an art director position that isn't something that's written on a business card, but lets me do art directing. So I'm finally hitting this pivotal point, and the biggest agency, and I'm on Main Street, and it's fun, and it's a small agency, The Agency, run by my buddy Hedgman Dent Smith, and right across the street, Doe Anderson gets the national account for Salem cigarettes. It's a, you cannot understand how gigantic this is. Big, big, like you've hit a, you've come from a small farm team and you've hit a home run that went out of the ballpark. Mm-hmm. So they gear up like mad for all the work they need to do this. They lose the account in 6 months. Hmm. And there's blood on the street. The city of Louisville never recovers. And that with a combination of people coming up from Kinko's who don't need college degrees just washes the value out of the, of having this as a job.
What year was this?
So this is the early millennium.
Now, were you, and this is on Main Street?
And yeah, I'm on Main Street.
There's a reason why I'm asking. Main and what?
Right there, the next street after the KCA, Kentucky Center for the Arts.
So,
on the same side.
Fifth, maybe? Third?
Is that fifth, I think?
Four? Yeah, yeah. So I was 30 years at 8th and Main.
Oh, yes.
So I would have been down at my law office.
Wow,
With my name, Ronald R. Van Stockham, Jr., right there
I'd
on the door.
Just passed
and
it
you would have walked by it, and we wouldn't know back then that we'd be sitting here today, me in awe of your success.
And me in, like, awe of how cool I get to be when I get old, like you.
Oh, wow, you're sweet. Well, so let me say it's about 26 minutes in, and what I'd like to do is I'd like to briefly halt this continuing discussion and play out the next 3.5 minutes with some of the early music from Zan Hoffman's day. That'll make about a 30-minute podcast.
Nice.
We'll call it number one, and then we'll start right up with that very interesting label that he has taunted us with that demands an exploration.
It's sick.
An explanation. So here we are. This music is from Zan Hoffman's early years, and we'll talk about that because his early music, his early performances, perhaps not so much the performances, but the music was different. So for now, Reggie Van Stockham in the new Reggie Van Stockham podcast.
Reggie Van Stockham podcast.
With the incredible Zan Hoffman.
With the incredible Reggie Van Stockham.
We'll see you the next time around.
Ciao.
Let's go.